Because for some reason it's, oh, now the recording started. Good. Okay. Well, it's April 15th, and this is the spring 2020 nutrition counseling call, which means that it's the nutrition counseling roundtable call in the age of the coronavirus. So we've got, it looks like, about four people on the call. We may have a few more joining us later. Let's just jump in. Oh, I'll start first, actually, just a few updates. Not surprisingly, my 2-day counseling intensive trainings have been canceled through at least June. Stay tuned about the ones later in the year. Some of you may know some of the conferences that you may have gone were planning to go to have been canceled. The IADEP conference, the eating disorder conference, was canceled, and I just heard that the Internal Family Systems conference in the fall is canceled until next year. So that kind of thing will be happening, but stay tuned in terms of my trainings. So we've got just four people on the call today. I'm just going to open it up to bring up whatever concerns you might have, questions, resources. How you doing? Anybody want to jump in?
I can start with a
Sure.
question.
Yeah.
My name's
Who is
Thaisa.
this, and where you're? What's your name?
My name is Thaisa, and I'm calling from San Jose, California. And I have a, it's a question that has been circulating my mind, and yesterday I thought it was like perfect. I will ask Molly about it. So what I do as a dietitian is I work in the outpatient clinic, and I provide diabetes education. And sometimes, what I'm encountering is, oh, and I wanted to say that I've been to your calls couple months ago, and I asked the question, and you gave suggestion, and it worked wonderful.
Oh, good.
Worked wonderful, and I've gone to one of your trainings, maybe like 5 years ago or so. And so what I'm encountering is when the patient is asking me when they're with a newly diagnosed diabetes, A1C, well, in this particular patient was 7.1, so he wants to, use the lifestyle to reverse diabetes, and changing all this habits and going plant-based and everything, and it's great and it's wonderful. And he lost already like 20 pounds. He's on medication for cholesterol, for blood pressure, and he doesn't want any more medicine, so it makes sense. And so I get that, and I get the world of it. And as a clinician, I also know that, well, diabetes is progressive, and you have A1C 7.1. You're not taking the medication, and so for how long can the lifestyle be effective? At some point, there is a progression, and at some point, the medicine is important. And maybe, and this, and so the question is, how do I dance with the patient and attending to the questions and to the to his or her plan to base it all on lifestyle, and at the same time provide research or provide evidence without, without dismissing their goals, or without, breaking their breaking
You
their
want to
desires.
listen to him and appreciate, what his goals are, and it sounds like he's already worked very hard on it, and has lost some weight, and you're a team person with him, right? And that's great. And you're wondering sort of at what time is it appropriate to say something along the lines of, this isn't working. You need medication. Now, you don't want to be that blunt, obviously. The question is, can you keep in your mind clinically what you know to be true? Like, if you know to be true that he is indeed doing everything he possibly could. And he's put off the need for medication, and yet now medication is the next thing, right? It sounds like you've been in the field long enough that you sort of know that you can tell when he's at that point. Is that right?
I could tell. In this particular case, it's more, I guess, I'm almost like projecting my concerns, my clinical concerns on him, although he's just diagnosed. I mean, it's been going on and had it for some time. So it's newly diagnosed. But I'm sure he's been in the pre-diabetes a lot longer. So it's more of
I'm going to suggest a couple things. One is I'll suggest something that I wrote in the past that may be helpful. It's a tip I called how to have tough conversations, which is sort of when you feel like you need to say something really clear to the person that you suspect they don't want to hear. And I would be glad to send a copy of that tip out to you. Just email me after the end of the call. But I will go over it a little bit. Basically, as a matter of fact, I probably should just pull it up. It's tip number 81, how to bring up tough stuff. There's a format you could follow if you would like to. This is something that was developed particularly for the medical field. It's sometimes referred to as something in brief action planning. First, you bring up the topic. Say, I think it's time to talk about where medication would fit for you. I'm just thinking of an example, the example that you have. And then state some things that you know to be true. And that may include, in his case, how many wonderful things he's done already, how long it is maybe that he stayed in the pre-diabetes stage and not needed medication. The other things that you'd say that are true is his lab results, right? and then you throw in a fact or two, like when hemoglobin A1Cs are at this level for more than X number of months. I don't know. You decide what you would say exactly. But when this is we know that that means that slow but steady damage is happening to the small blood vessels or whatever, you know, specific, somewhat scary facts you want to say. And then the final step is offering hope. People who continue to do all the amazing, wonderful things you've been doing and add just a little bit of medication with their doctor's recommendation can bring that A1C right back down again, for example, right? Then you it sounds like in his case, one of the factoids would be that even when one is doing all the lifestyle changes, the blood sugar regulation system continues to get a little worse year by year or something like that. Does that sound true to you, by the way?
Yeah.
It's
a great structure to – I see it as a great structure to – present information in a polite way, I guess.
A straightforward, factual, you know, and you do it in as few words as you can, just succinctly and clearly. And then you ask for a follow-up question from him, like, how does that all sound to you? And you elicit from him what his thoughts are. What does that sound like?
And I think the last thing that I want to add, or to this, to clarification for myself is, am I doing unsolicited advice when I say this? Like, well, yes, lifestyle is important, and at some point you need medication. Is that and he
right?
Didn't
good
ask
question.
For it, right?
If you just jumped in like that, yeah, that would be without asking permission. That's why it makes sense to do that sort of initial. I'll tell you, in my style, and I don't know if it would fit for you, I tend to do something like, Mr. Jones, I've got some thoughts here about this particular spot you're in right now. You ready for it? Mm-hmm. You ask his permission to proceed, mm-hmm. just sort of generally saying, This is a situation that I have some input for you. Are you ready for it? Something like that. Then you can launch into it. What does that sound like mm-hmm. to you?
Mm-hmm.
Might that work?
Is that a question to
I
me?
Yeah, and I hear that you're wonderfully sensitive to not steamrolling over the client. And, you do want to ask permission, and that's great that you're sensitive to that. And there are times when it makes sense to ask permission to bring up a topic he might not want to hear.
Right.
And if you ask permission, usually the client will be okay with it. Right? They'll let you move forward.
Okay.
Anything
thank
else
you.
About that? Sure.
No, thank you.
And do
thank you.
Yeah, do email me at the end, and I'll send you a copy of that tip number 81 about bringing up tough things. Okay, for some of you just joined recently, and this is the Spring Nutrition Counseling Roundtable call. Welcome. And this is just an open conversation. We talked about how to handle particular tough moments in diabetes counseling. Anything anybody else wants to bring up and or just wanting to share about where they're at with what we're all dealing with in the world right now? Anybody want to jump in? We only have about, 7 or 8 people on the call. So that means we need to have people jump in. Anybody want to share how their practice has changed? Particularly, I'll share from my perspective, and then I'd love to hear from more of you, too. Obviously, in the middle of March, very quickly, I had to shift to most of my individual clients being on Zoom. I still have a very few of them coming in. I've found a way to do it safely, following the CDC guidelines. But most of my people are on Zoom, and that's been a bit of a learning curve for all of us. In most cases, I've found it's actually working pretty well, a little surprisingly well, I think. Anybody else have any input about how they're doing making this transition?
Hi, Molly.
Hi.
My name's
and
Krista.
And who's speaking?
My name's Krista.
And you're calling from?
I am from Connecticut.
Where are you calling from? Connecticut. Welcome.
Thank you. I missed the first couple of minutes of the phone call, but I just heard your update. I'm actually an outpatient dietitian in a community hospital, and I've switched to just doing phone calls. I haven't been able to get any video conferencing capabilities yet, so I've had to switch to all phone calls, and I think one of the things that I'm learning is the hardest thing to overcome is that people are less concerned about what they're eating and more concerned about how they're going to get food. and whether or not the coronavirus is living on food, the food safety aspect of it.
Right.
So I've found that a lot of my questions or even my diet is, or my diet educations are moving towards food safety, and then discussing different ways that people could get food, and then having to plan a diet education, just giving tips and saying, well, when you can get the food that I can recommend.
Right.
So
yeah,
that has become more of my challenge, is even getting people just to be able to focus on taking care of themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, I suspect you're not alone, that everybody's priorities have shifted. So you notice both food security, in other words, getting enough money and being able to get out of the house to get food.
Correct.
And also,
to the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you presumably have had to get up to speed as soon as you could on all of those issues, which you never anticipated you were going to have to.
Correct.
We've all had to adapt, haven't we? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything else you've noticed about the switch from in-person to phone?
I think it's a little bit harder to make a connection, because I'm used to working in person and being able to teach with somebody sitting 3 feet away from me. So not having the ability to show people handouts that are usually at my fingertips, but having to mail them, and just learning how to teach where people can just hear me right now and not necessarily see me.
Yeah. It is different, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yeah. Does anybody else on the call have any other ideas for Krista about, particularly the phone? You don't have video. What workarounds there might be?
This is Penny Wilson, and I came in late as well. I just was able to join a couple of minutes ago.
Sure.
When I've done phone sessions, I've had to get really good at pausing to give them plenty of time to respond.
That's a really good point, because you can't hear whether they've got that look on their face that they are considering what you're saying and they're about to say something. You can't see that on the phone.
Thank you. That's actually a really great tip, because my tendency is to jump in sometimes before I've given people a chance to consider what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, that I've found is if I'm taking notes, I'll let them know that, you know, I'm quiet because I'm taking some notes. You know, just give me a second.
Oh.
And then, you know, when I'm done with the notes, I pop back in and say, okay, now, you know, and ask the next question or...
Yeah, so you're sort of narrating what you're doing in a way that you wouldn't if they were right there.
Right. So they know that I'm still there, that the line didn't drop, and that it's okay that the phone's quiet for a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So narrating, you know, adding to that, Penny, I've also learned, particularly from dietitians who do a lot of phone work, they've told me that it often is useful to do a little bit more little summaries as you go along, which is a little like that narrating. For instance, a little bit more of the, well, let's see. So we've talked about that, and you've decided to do this. So we have 10 minutes left. What would you like to do? You know, those little summaries that sort of move things along. seem even more important on phone sessions.
This is Hannah.
How are you doing, Krista? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And your name again?
Hannah. I'm an outpatient dietitian, also doing phone sessions now. And one of the problems I'm running into is the sessions go really fast. I feel like patients, I don't know if it's because we're not face-to-face, but they seem to be less open, or they answer questions less, and they want to just like cut to the, you know, the most important thing. So like, just give me the information. I don't, you know, even though I want to go into their background, you know, get a better idea,
get
of,
to know them.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something I've been running into, and just they just seem less willing to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious if anyone else has noticed that.
My response
to that is I'm not surprised. I'm wondering whether, I think it was Penny's idea to sort of narrate as you go along, or might almost be useful, because you're saying, Kenna, that you're wanting to do a similar process to what you're doing in person, where you spend a little time getting to know them, doing the intake, etc. And I'm wondering if it's more obvious to them when you're in person that that's what you're going to be doing. And that if you want to do all that on the phone, you'll want to almost, I don't know, sort of give them a heads up ahead of time. Like, we have X number of minutes today, and I'd like to spend at least the first several minutes getting to know you, or I don't know what terms you would use. How does that sound?
That sounds really good. I usually do that in person, and I had dropped that when I moved to the phone, and I think it was just kind of I don't know, maybe just not used to the format, so I was doing things differently. But yeah, that would be really helpful, so I'll try that.
Yeah, it can be a little awkward, a little clunky, but hey, if it's in the service of the session going better.
I think that's Penny again. I think that's a great point of, you know, it's kind of setting the expectations for the session with them and how the flow is going to go of, hey, you know, the first few minutes we're going to do this, and then we'll, you know, pause and check in or whatever, whatever it is. But that also, I would think, would give them some comfort that they understand, okay, this is, particularly if they're new clients, okay, you know, this is how that works, and kind of mirror what you do in person.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Karen from Iowa. I'm a WIC dietitian.
Iowa, great.
And we've gone totally remote with our web-based program at home on my laptop, but I can't Zoom with clients. I'm just doing phone. And especially with new clients, I have found it very helpful to sort of explain ahead what's coming on. And we have two kinds of appointments. One is more longer initial, and another is more of a quick check-in. And for the check-in, making it very client-centered, instead of maybe pulling questions from the last care plan, I sort of just left it up to them, and I got like the best response from somebody, like, wow, this was the best session I've ever talked to anybody at WIC before, because it was like, you know, oh, tell me what's going on. You know, it's just very funny to get that great feedback on the phone.
Yeah.
No handouts, you know. So
that's great.
It's sort of been interesting that you cut to the chase sometimes sooner.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that great? Yeah. And the setting expectations, it sounds like, Karen, one of the things you do is set the time expectations. And I'm wondering whether for those of you for whom you're used to maybe, what, an hour for the first one or something like that, it may be less clear when they're on the phone. And most of us, when we're on the phone, we're sort of, we just chat for a while, and then when we're done, we're hang up, you know, and that's what we're used to. So even at the beginning saying, I have allotted 45 minutes for this call, how are you on your end? Is that okay? You know, sort of, which asks them to sort of set aside the time. Or if they say, no, I only have half an hour because my kid needs to start his homework and I have to supervise him or whatever, you've at least set the expectations. Okay, what else? Questions or suggestions about this distance work we're doing?
The other thing that I would add, is, this is Stacia, is mm-hmm. also what I've been doing with my Zoom calls is, and phone calls too. At the beginning, I would say, oh, this is new to me. So, you know, I'm adjusting to this myself. And mm-hmm. it seemed like to clear up to give some space. And definitely having the structure, just giving the heads up. Okay, I'm going to ask you questions about this. I'm going to go into this piece. And typically the response has been, okay, like, sounds good.
Right.
I'm on board.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, a little more being explicit. You know, Stacia, as you were talking, I realized one other thing that you may occasionally run into. If you're in your office with the person, you know how private it is. You know who is in that room. You know how people can't hear outside, hopefully, so that you know exactly or pretty much how safe that person is going to feel about confidentiality, about answering, you know, what might be very personal questions. When they're on the phone, you have no idea who is sitting right next to them or right in the next room. So if I have to do this literally with all of my clients these days are therapy clients. They're not, I don't do nutrition counseling anymore. I can sort of see on Zoom, you know, whether there's anyone else in the room, but often or every now and then I'll see someone walk by and I'll realize, wait a minute, this isn't going to work. And I'll talk with them the next time about making sure they have a private room to do their Zoom session in. So if you suspect you may be getting into a sort of a personal topic that might be a little uncomfortable for the person, you could pause a minute and say, do you feel like you have adequate privacy right now? Is it possible to be in a room that where you're there by yourself? Something like that. So I did write a tip a number of years ago about working on the phone, and I've collected even more good ideas today, and maybe I should edit that tip and send it out again, but it was tip number 89, and if anybody wants a copy of it, I believe it is in my archives on my website, but you're also welcome to email me, and I'll be glad to send it out to you. So, where are we? Other questions, suggestions about how we're working now and or anything about nutrition counseling and the process of helping our clients make changes? Like we have about 9 or 10 people on the call, and speaking of setting expectations, I'm always willing to do this up to a whole hour, but if we don't need it, we don't have to fill the time. Other questions?
Hi, my name's Katie. I'm from Ohio.
Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Hi, Katie.
And I just wondered what other people were finding during the COVID stuff, if possibly it seems like patients are not as willing to work with us because they've got other things on their mind. I know, as we discussed already, that the topics can certainly be different. I think it's still new enough that it's like we're still all kind of feeling out, is this, you know, am I going to be seeing patients? Am I going to be seeing less patients? But I just wondered a general consensus, what everyone else is feeling, if they're seeing fewer patients because people are just concerned about other things and, like, nutrition is not a priority right now. And also maybe, like, referrals. Wondered how, like, those are going. Sometimes I feel like my doctor's referrals have certainly reduced because perhaps doctors are seeing fewer people or they're just, like, don't think that patients are, again, going to be concerned about nutrition, so they're not referring them for nutrition. Anything kind of about that or how you might approach even, like, the referrers as well?
Mm-hmm. Good question. What are you guys seeing?
This is Hannah. I'm in Washington. I made sure to reach out to the doctors beforehand and let them know, like, please please keep sending referrals, and I'll message them during the day because I'm able to do that. If they're seeing a patient, I'll say, you know, this patient looks like they could use a nutrition visit. They haven't seen nutrition before or whatever. And just stay in contact with them. And so I've noticed they've continued putting in referrals, so I'm happy about that. But then also our department has been going through old patient lists of, like, pre-diabetes and diabetes and, like, just reaching out to people. But our script has been a little different. So we were told, you know, do offer nutrition appointments, but maybe also just see if people need resources or just check in, you know, and see if there's anything else that they might have questions about that you could help, or you could refer them to someone else, you know. So it's like our role is still nutrition, but then it's also kind of like showing, or, you know, a way of the clinic reaching out to patients and showing that we care about them and we, you know, we want to help them if we can. So it's a little bit changed that way, but then that still helps us, like, stay busy during the day if our patient load is smaller. So and then sometimes, like, I'll reach out to patients and they'll say, oh, no, I don't have questions, but then they'll start asking me a lot of questions, which is funny. But sometimes those calls do turn into nutrition appointments or people realize they do have questions. So, you know, just that's how we've been handling it.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah, Katie, is any of that fit for you?
What's that? Sorry?
Does any of that fit for you?
Yeah, I think so. Reaching out, you know, sometimes it's like looking at your own preconceptions of going, oh, you know, I don't think people are going to want to work with me right now, but then going, wait, but they might have other concerns, and, you know, checking in with yourself on that, and just some people are going to really want to work with us because they're really struggling at home, and others might feel too bogged down by other things in life going on. And the same with the doctors. I think, yeah, that's good just to hear that you're still checking in with them and, and that they're receptive to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like that's, I mean, that concept of checking in with the primary care docs on a regular basis is a good marketing technique anyway, but maybe particularly now. And, you know, Hannah, you mentioned sometimes what you're ending up doing is more providing resources or, you know, asking about food insecurity and, you know, food safety. And that's what Krista was bringing up earlier, that you know, sometimes what they need from us is feels a little basic to us, you know, and maybe not what we think we went to grad school for. But, hey, if that's what's needed right now, that's what we need to do. And I'm wondering, Katie, are you in more of a private practice setting or?
Yeah, it's kind of private practice.
Yeah. Which is a little different than a specific clinic. If you're embedded in a clinic, then you can do, as Hannah was saying, so, you know, go back over charts and things like that. Though I'm wondering, Katie, whether this might, if you're twiddling your thumbs, you could use this as a time to go through your files and see people you haven't seen in a while and just reach out to them, asking how they're doing, and, you know, even in just a friendly way, and see if, because who knows, even people who did really well with making diet changes may be freaking out a little bit now and need some help staying on track or something. Who knows, right?
Yeah, definitely. I've reached out, and a couple people, definitely people have scheduled, and yeah, just interested in kind of general consensus, what others have been finding. And
Well, Katie, I will say one of the things I've noticed in my therapy practice, and I'm sure it's similar in nutrition, particularly where it's sort of ongoing nutrition counseling, is that people are finding they're sort of hunkering down. I mean, physically they're hunkering down in their homes, but also there's sort of a sense that they're putting a lot of things on hold. And that can often mean making significant behavioral changes as well. It just goes on hold. And there's nothing particularly necessarily good or bad about that. It just is. And you know, can you acknowledge it? I've, with several of my clients, we've discontinued for the time being, just acknowledging things are on hold. We'll get back to those, you know, revisiting those traumatic experiences from childhood or whatever it is that I'm working on with them. We'll revisit those when you have, you know, space and time and energy for that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think acknowledging that sounds very, very powerful.
If that's where they're at, that's where they're at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes
anybody
that helps move them forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, it may be, if you sort of say, acknowledge that may be the case, they may say, oh, well, maybe there is something I could work on. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts for Katie? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we could open up to any other questions, comments, suggestions.
Sometimes this is just another one. No one else is going to say anything. Again,
sure.
doing what we call telehealth by video, and one thing I guess I found is, it's kind of difficult to look at the patient on the video screen and chart at the same time. There is a little, I use Zoom as well, and there is a way that, like, the chart will pop. I can kind of see them, but sometimes when I'm on a certain charting screen, there's, like, too many screens open, and so I can't view them. And I find it helpful to look at them. It makes me, like, you know, more emotionally connect with them on the screen. And they don't necessarily know I'm not looking at them because I'm still kind of looking at the computer and the camera.
Right.
So sometimes, when I'm charting, I'm not actually looking at them and they think I am. But I do feel like it's so helpful to look, but I can't always when I'm on certain, like, charting screens. So I don't know. And it's still kind of so new that I'm not sure. Like, normally I actually have two screens, so that I can look at them at all times, but currently how I'm working, I only have one screen, so I can't do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's impacting me in, like, the way I'm doing things. I kind of feel like it is, but maybe it's not.
Well, Katie, let me ask you, when you used to be in person with people and needed to do some charting. How did you handle that?
I probably looked at them more and didn't chart.
Uh-huh.
And that's always the issue, is that then you're waiting till after the appointment. I did chart. Like, I would do some charting, definitely, especially during, like, an assessment. You know, I'm going to be charting during the assessment, but when we're more, like, counseling, I do tend to not chart that much, which I'm always trying to – I want to be able to chart, but I really want to look at them, and I really can't do both of those things at the same time.
I hear you. I find that too. And one of the things I've been speaking with my therapist colleagues about this, and one thing we've realized is that one of the things that makes Zoom so tiring is that usually your eyes are on the screen, you know, pretty much continuously. And when you're in the room with someone, that isn't the case. You're pretty much looking at them, but then your eyes might go around a little bit. You might look up because you're thinking of something, and that's normal, right? And Zoom is different. It sort of makes us, the expectation is that we'll keep our eyes on the screen the whole time. And so if you're then looking down, you feel even weirder. You're looking somewhere else. I don't know what to suggest besides maybe acknowledging it if it's feeling awkward to you. Even acknowledge it out loud to the person and say, you know, I am taking some notes. I find that handy. And then ask them whether it's distracting to them or not, you know. Or something.
And could you also just say, like, this is Aisha, could you also say that, oh, gosh, I'm noticing it's really hard for me to look at the screen all the time.
Mm.
It's hurting my eyes. I mean, this is just human. You're human.
And sometimes some of you will notice, of course, if you do Zoom a lot, that you'll notice that some people, when you look at them, it looks like they're looking over to the side, or looking down or up or something, because their camera is, like, especially if you're on an iPad and you have it sideways, the camera's over to the side, and it looks a little weird. And hopefully your camera is in a spot where it almost looks like you've got eye contact with them. I presume some of you who are doing Zoom have noticed you can Google how to set up your computer so that it looks like you've got eye contact. There are specific ways to do that, where the computer is placed and that kind of thing. But that's a whole other thing.
How are we going to get
that? Go on.
Oh, I was going to say, too, that, you know, reaching out to past clients and letting them know that you are doing virtual counseling, if they feel like they need help, could be really great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a product out there called Loom, L-O-O-M. It's like $5 a month, and it allows you to send video emails. So rather than just an email, you could record a short video saying, hey, Susan, you know, I know a lot of people are having some tough times right now, and I was thinking about you and just want to let you know that I'm here and I'm doing virtual sessions, you know, whatever. To me, that's a lot more high touch than just a email blast out to everybody, if you have the time to do it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great idea. And then also, I just had a blank. What I think some people are doing is going into their website and just adding a little note that I'm able to do either video sessions or phone sessions now, you know, just putting it in there on the page where you talk about your services for those of you in private practice. Good questions. Good discussion. What else have we got here? We have a few more minutes.
Molly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's this?
This is Krista in Connecticut.
Yeah.
I had one other question, and it kind of follows up to what Katie was talking about. I do outpatient counseling 3 days a week, and I'm finding that when I'm still getting my referrals, but just not as many, and I'm calling those patients and offering them phone consultations, and I find that people will talk to me for about 10 minutes, and I'll ask a couple of questions, and I've offered to send people information so they can look it over beforehand and then call me, but I'm finding less people are wanting to schedule a phone consultation. I think it's, I don't know if it goes back to you don't know who else is in the home, or if people are trying, a lot of people are trying to work from home, so they don't necessarily have the free time to be able to do that. And I've been struggling with either like a phrase or something I could say that could still make them feel like that they could talk to me for, you know, a few minutes and I might be able to help them in some way. So maybe it's the, it goes back to everything where the importance of my diet, my nutrition is not necessarily my priority. So I wish I could think of something to say to make them realize that it's still an important part of what they could be doing. So I don't know if anybody has any ideas.
Krista, let me ask you, you're in a community hospital. Are you in a situation where your visitors, even on the phone now, are supposed to be visits and they get billed, per se? Or are you just there to provide whatever help to people and it doesn't have to be, you know what I mean?
As of right now, I'm just here, and that could change in a couple of weeks as they might actually get me some telehealth capabilities and the billing part of it gets straightened out. So right now I'm just kind of a random phone call that's
general
offering
resource,
healthy eating information.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because that's, it makes sense to be clear about that. And it sounds like you're wanting to fully, you know, convey to them that it's not just that you have 5 minutes, you know, that you really can do a full you know, fully instruct them, or that old term, instruct, or counsel them on exactly what it is they need to do, because people are still being diagnosed with things these days, right? And finding out that their cholesterol is high or whatever. You want to figure out how to convey in a phrase, you said. What is it you want to convey?
Just the availability that, you know, I'm here, healthy eating is still important. I don't know, maybe just something so I don't feel like we don't lose all those people that would be coming to us otherwise. Maybe just something to make them feel that it's still important.
I have a thought for you, and then we'll see if other people have some thoughts. One thought to me is to use the classic menu situation. In other words, where you have a list of things that people might benefit from talking to you about. And you could list them. You could say, these days I'm helping people make sure they know how to shop safely in the supermarket. I'm also helping people if they're having trouble getting enough food. I'm helping people understand what their doctor has said about this condition that, you know, whether it's diabetes or whatever it is. I don't know, Krista, just sort of having a list that people then might grab onto. Is that making any sense?
I like that idea. I hadn't thought of that.
You've probably been doing this long enough, at least, that you have a nice little short list of things people have been asking you, right?
Absolutely.
So you could to do that quickly, but then also include the more MNT stuff that you can still do if you can.
Okay.
Any
Thank
other
you.
Ideas for Krista?
I'd almost throw in something about more like the behavioral side of nutrition, because I think that's also what a lot of people are struggling with now too. It's like throwing in with the menu of, yeah, it could be how to secure food or how to use things, you know, in your house with limited stuff, but it's also that behavioral side. You know, people are struggling with maybe like emotional eating, stress eating, boredom. So that they understand. Because so many, I think patients don't realize that we deal with that so much more. It's not just about education and nutrition. It's the behavioral part of it.
Yeah. So even throwing in the other part of saying, even if your doctor gave you a handout or you already know a lot about cholesterol and diet, I often help people with how they are actually going to do that in a sustained way. Yeah, or something like that. Krista, what you're talking about is actually a classic problem we run into, but somehow it's sort of, it has gotten to be more front and center. The people think, oh, nutrition, you know, well, I don't really need that. You know, I know how I'm supposed to be eating. And so we have to go back a step and help them see what we can do for them. Any other ideas for Krista? Okay, well, this has been a wide-ranging call, as I suspected, a fair amount about making this transition to telehealth. And I really value all of you, your contributions to this call. I think this has been really helpful. And this call has been recorded, and so your ideas will help even more people. And I did mention on this call that there's some tips that I would be willing to send out to anyone. That's something that's always open. If you find a tip that's listed on my site, but it's not there anymore because it was written a little while ago or something, feel free to email me, and I'd be glad to send you a PDF of it. And do stay in touch, and keep your fingers crossed about whether Fancy is going to happen in Indianapolis this year. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. We'll see. Places are making decisions about fall conferences now. So, okay. Well, take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, Molly.
Stay safe.